step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to the most positive pop culture podcast in the multiverse, Metalcore Nerds, where each week I have a guest from the podcasting and music community. We talk about the latest and greatest in entertainment. I'm your host, Sean Mott, and today we're taking a deep dive into our guest journey as a comic book writer, Jono from No Trigger. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here.
Very excited to have you. Very excited to hear your story. If you're new to Metalcore Nerds, welcome to the show. If you're returning, thanks for coming back. Love you guys. This is how Metalcore Nerds breaks down. Each week, we talk the latest nerd news. Then we go into our not watching section, where we highlight what we've watched on streaming or in theaters. And then we go into our main topic, which again is about our guest. First things first is the Metalcore Nerds Song of the Week. And the song of this week is from our guest. This is No Trigger with Brainwash.
Yelling at the classroom and wasting all our fucking time. They said, don't do drugs, son. I'll scare you straight, take a look at my gun. Listen close while I give advice on shit I've never tried. It was all a lie, all a lie. I was brainwashed as a kid, and I'm still dealing with it. Yes, fucked up. Evolution sucks dick, call creation. They shove it so far down your throat, they don't stop until your brain explodes. Patching up the knowledge gaps, now you're found in science labs. Bullshit priests, bullshit wars, bullshit rules, bullshit God. Jesus is Santa Claus, Bible is fully flawed. It's all manipulation from a global cult hallucination. It's all a lie. I was brainwashed as a kid.
Again, that was No Trigger with Brainwash. That is off their latest album, Doctor Album, that just dropped. So, Jono, tell us a little bit about the album.
Yeah, so first of all, there needs to be, I guess, some kind of explainer of it's called Doctor Album. So I think I have like a way deeper holistic view of the band and the album than they do. I joined the band about 5 years ago now. Time's not real. And yeah. Even more so where, so when I was in high school, my band at the time, the Swellers, we were always using MySpace and we heard about Nitro Records signing all these bands. So we brought No Trigger to our town. We like booked them through MySpace. And then they, when I was in high school, they played down the street. They stayed at my house. And I was like, this is crazy. Like this record label band staying at our house. Fast forward to Swellers breaking up a few years later. And then Tom from No Trigger calling me and he's like, hey, what are you doing in August? And I had a band at the time called Baggage where I like played bass and sang. And he's like, cool. So do you want to play a show in Lansing, Michigan? Or do you want to do a month in Europe? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll cancel the show and then play with you instead. Okay, cool. At the time, I was doing like hired gun stuff for a few people. So I was doing like the early November. I was also doing No Trigger. I was kind of just like bopping around because I was like, I need to figure out my identity as a musician. All of this is very important to the No Trigger story, by the way. So I go on a tour with No Trigger and I'm used to my version, which is like super businessy band world. You get to a venue, you open your laptop, you do your things, and then you play your show and then whatever. No Trigger is like, okay, guys, I got everyone Ubers. I looked on this like travel site and these are all the cool places in town. You want to go? Cool. Then we jump in a taxi and just go do stuff like the whole day. And then we show up when we play, then we have fun, then we party after. And then I was like, oh, okay. So then like, I was like, I guess I don't need my laptop all the time. So then that was the beginning of this vacation core concept where everyone in No Trigger wasn't constantly on tour. So it wasn't a business to them. It was literally, right, they only did it because they loved it. On my end, I was so ingrained with like, touring is my profession. I just constantly do it. I've seen Germany. I've done whatever. I haven't seen shit. Like I've seen the venue and like the block near the venue and then maybe a vegan spot in a coffee shop and that's it.
Right.
The more I was at No Trigger, the more tours I did. Then finally it was like, yeah, let's just make it official. Like this isn't like I'm not a hired person. Like I am the drummer of No Trigger. We made that official. We recorded at my brother's house like 2 years ago, which is insane for this album. In 2 days, we recorded 18 songs, which is like,
wow,
nuts. So I just went like crazy with like drumming and like I learned all these songs. We originally were like recording over Logic when they sent like a free trial to all these musicians. So we're like, whoa, we could record in our basements. And then we could send each other stuff like across the country and it'll be cool. All of us wrote some songs, threw it into a pile. And then what I wasn't expecting was like, yeah, let's do all of them. I'm like, okay, sure. And then what started happening was like, there's more of this artistic freedom because it was like, whatever you want to do, who cares? And then we kept hearing, who cares? When we're on tour, let's go somewhere. Who cares? What's going to happen? I love that as a mantra. And it's like a very like powerful thing. We started like putting all these songs together with the who cares mentality, recording at the height of the pandemic. We're all like in weird, like our own little bubble. We're all terrified of the world burning. And then we're just writing this album because who cares? Like, let's like let ourselves enjoy life for a second because we've been deprived for a year at that point. You know, we put our brains into this thing. Then after that, the guys went to Alan from 4 Years Strong. So it was at my brother's studio in Michigan called Wonder Studios. So Nick Diener's my brother. And then they went to Alan from 4 Years Strong from Worcester, where they're from in Massachusetts. And he did vocals and like some other like producing stuff. So I didn't hear vocally any of the stuff. I heard some like loose concepts or whatever. And then they send the album and I'm like, what the hell is this? And like, I had like a weird response at first because I was like, in my head, I had this totally different thing. And you guys have like sound effects and you guys have like all of this like really weird stuff going on. And then they're like, no, just keep listening to it. Okay. And then I started listening to it. Then we did like music came back and then we toured and we did stuff and we got to see each other again. And we had this like, oh my God, we missed each other. This is like such a powerful thing. And then I realized that the album isn't about just like, who cares, goofball, whatever. It's about like when life gets so messed up, you revert to being like a little kid again to like navigate through that kind of stuff mentally. So like, what's the type of music you grew up with? What's the topics you think about? And then like this bigger picture thing of like, God, I wish we could just be kids again. Why can't we? What's like stopping us from that? And then that's kind of like Dr. Album, the concept where it's let's like kind of like open our brains a little bit. The guys did a bunch of acid, so that was part of opening their brains. So, by the way, that's the hidden part of it that we clearly talk about all over the album. But my part of it is like this bigger holistic thing of like, as someone who was very stuck up, who then like, I was like not drinking my whole life. And then I like kind of started, and then I like started like experiencing and trying things and doing whatever. While this is all going on, while this like whole like, let's figure out who we are as people thing happened. And then now this like cartoon of an album came out. And now I'm like, oh, this isn't just a cartoon. It's like deep as shit. Like this is like a pretty serious thing. So that is like the holistic view of Dr. Album, which you might not hear from the other guys, but that's my interpretation.
I really like that. And that makes a lot of sense. And that's a really, really amazing story. Because I was not privy to No Trigger before starting getting some like PR lists of like releases and stuff like that and being like, oh, I'll check out this band. It's been a good gateway for me to check out bands that have been off my radar and everything like that. And I was like, wow, this band kind of reminds me of NOFX in a way. It's super fun, you know, very punk, but like it's like the early kind of forms of pop punk, you know what I mean? A little more on the punk side than the pop punk side, but it's a super fun, like you saying you hearing the vocals and me after like listening to the songs, like not knowing that those pieces of information, I can totally get probably where you were coming from, especially probably from being in a band like the Swellers before that. It's such like a major contrast of each other in many ways, which also major fan of the Swellers. I saw a few times in Syracuse, I believe.
Sweet.
I think you guys played The Lost a few times.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So that's super cool. What a I think I like your version better than what their version might be.
Well, it's funny because I started like explaining that and things, and then they hear it and they're like, holy what? Shit. But I think it's like I like how pure their version of it is and their interpretation stuff, right? Because like when No Trigger started like 20 years ago or more, actually, because Swellers are 20 years old. They're older than Swellers. So they're like, they used to be just like a melodic hardcore band. So it was like Good Riddance, Comeback Kid, like that kind of like stuff. Whereas like melodic mid-paced hardcore-ish stuff. And then this album, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the band Dillinger Four, but there's like this whole world of like Fat Records artists that like,
yes,
this totally fits in with perfectly, where it's like tongue-in-cheek, snarky, like who cares, like that whole like attitude. And then it kind of explains all of the stuff going on. So all the people that are used to, like, again, like you said, like Swellers was like a very serious band, like we didn't have joke songs,
right? Yeah.
But like allowing myself to have that for once is incredible. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Cause it's actually saying a deep thing in a jokey way. You know, it's not just a joke for the joke's sake.
Yeah. And that's, I think that'll kind of correlate into a lot of things that we'll probably end up talking about throughout this whole episode. Is that's why I kind of relate to pop culture and comic book adaptations or comic books itself. Cause a lot of it is just kind of this, like, you know, you're reading a literal picture book, like it's drawings, you know, with text on it. And at surface level, it can seem very juvenile, but there's some of the best stories I've read in comics or in something that was inspired by the comics, just from like a story perspective or a relatable perspective. And I think that's probably why I have such like a deep love for so much of this stuff, is because just the way it makes me feel or the way it helped me escape a certain thing that was super heavy in life. Music is the same way. Music was that for me before that. Now I have more of both in the same thing. I used to play in a band as well. Let's get into some nerd news. So this first one, Matt Shakman is reportedly in talks to direct the Fantastic Four movie. Now, originally this was supposed to be directed by John Watts, who did the Spider-Man Tom Holland MCU trilogy, and then he left seemingly to not do superhero movies, even though he signed on for a Star Wars TV series, and there's other rumors of him taking the next Spider-Man movie. It seems like Matt Shakman's going to do it. It also came out that Matt Shakman was signed on to do Star Trek 4, and then he left the project, making this look like it's going to be a done deal, and it'll most likely be fully officially announced at D23 this upcoming weekend. I think this is a really, really smart move. The dude did WandaVision. Almost everyone who is like a Marvel fan, or maybe not even a Marvel fan, loved WandaVision. He kept people on the edge of their seats for weeks on end when people are starving for content. I've rewatched it since. It still holds up to me, at least. A lot of the storytelling in it is super well done, and it has probably my favorite line of dialogue in the whole MCU ever. But not only did he do WandaVision, this dude has directed episodes of Game of Thrones, Succession, The Boys, literal full seasons of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. This dude is no slouch when it comes to directing, especially TV. But this is his first movie directing role. Is this seem like a good move to you? Do you wish they kind of took a more ballsy approach instead of taking a guy who's been in the family before? Or do you think it's smart that they brought someone in who's done Marvel stuff before?
So with all of his past endeavors, first, we know that Fantastic Four has been like, a thing that's been tied up forever. And then B, it's been a thing like a can that's been kicked for years, right? So like seeing like John Krasinski in like the Doctor Strange film and like,
yep,
like those kinds of things where you're like, oh, it's like the fans, like they're getting it out of people's system so then they could like cleanse their palate for like the actual thing. The few thoughts, one was when WandaVision was going on, I was like wildly captivated because I'm like, it was the first MCU show, correct?
Yes. Yep.
So that's like all eyes on that. It was also such a big swing because it was done in such an odd way.
Yeah.
It's also based on like my favorite, like Tom King comic, like the Vision, which is like,
yeah,
one of my like him and like Gabriel Walter, like that combo was so rad. I remember loving that. Like, it's this like nice, like polished suburban imagery with this like dark underlying story. So I was like, okay, so WandaVision, cool. They set up this thing. I think like having that experience on those big, like an episode of The Boys is a movie. Like those are so well done that I'm like, yep, give them everything. I don't even care. Like, and I'm so into that show, like to the point where that has like bypassed MCU for me and where I'm I'm actually more excited for The Boys forever at this point. I didn't think I was going to get that. I think like you need someone that's not afraid to take big swings, someone that can like do justice to the thing and then make sure that it's not like just weird enough to where like it ruins the Fantastic Four for more people, because like sure there's gonna be people that like shit talk it or whatever, but like you have to treat people have been waiting for so long for like the good one. And I know like the MCU, this whole phase has very much been like, this is the, it's like a 3-year transition to something. And to the point where I'm even like, dude, like it's hard, like it's my favorite thing in the world and it's hard for me to keep up at this point. So like, get to the thing. I want the thing. And then I think this is part of that thing. And then that's what everyone's going to be like, okay, cool. So I endured the Eternals to be able to watch this, you know? So I think this is going to be like the payoff movie. So I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah, it's. I think it's the movie kicking off Phase 6, which is going to have those two Avengers movies that conclude this saga. And like, echoing what you said, this needs to be a home run. The Fantastic Four movies, the last one that came out a few years ago, is pretty bad. And I'm a really positive dude when it comes to pop culture, but I watched that movie and I was like, what did I just watch? I don't even know, because it starts off pretty strong and then it just happens. I don't even know, like the after the first half hour, after they get their powers, that movie just happened. This movie needs to kill it. And to kind of add to your the MCU thing, if they put out something every week, I would fucking watch it. I am like so in the bag for the MCU, but I can understand it's insanely overwhelming, especially with everything else. It's like there's so much content out right now and a lot of it is really fucking good. And I'll even be the first to say, as like the biggest MCU fanboy probably of all time, that there is so much stuff way better than the MCU. Even some of the best stuff in the MCU, like The Boys. The Boys is better than almost anything the MCU has done. And that's like a fact. Like, I'm going to talk about The Sandman in a little while. That show, I'm only 3 episodes in. And I'm like, this is one of the best comic book adaptations ever. 3 episodes in. Like, and I'm not saying that with hyperbole. It's just so well done. It doesn't even feel like a comic book show. It just feels like an incredible fantasy show.
Yep.
I don't think the MCU has done anything that's full out bad. The MCU, Marvel things that are not connected, there's been some bad stuff.
Well, I think it all comes down to it's too much of a good thing, right? So
yeah, if I think that's the thing too. It's more frequent. Everyone's like, I think that's the big problem where everyone's like, the MCU is falling apart. And it's like, is it really? Because the movies are still making a fuckload of money. The TV shows are still getting rated and having crazy viewership. And it's like, it's just all the negativity always comes full front in the algorithm. You know what I mean? But there is so much. Next piece of news, House of the Dragon got renewed for season 2. I don't think any shock to anyone. Maybe some people. Everyone was kind of on the boat of, I don't know if I want to watch this because the end of Game of Thrones burned me, but I was of the mind. I was like, they have to nail this. It has to be really good. I think it's going to turn a lot of people around. It seemingly has. The first episode, the premiere was 10 million viewers, and the second episode increased by 20% to 10.2 million. So it's like the biggest show on TV right now. And I'm not shocked. I know some people are, but I haven't even watched it yet, but I'm excited to watch it eventually.
I haven't done it yet because I want the like proper sit down absorb it thing.
Exactly.
I also was one of the people that was like, the writer in me is like, man, like, you guys expedited so much stuff in that last season, you betrayed me and blah blah blah. And I remember all the like controversy of like, I heard the guys like got offered a Star Wars thing and they're like, yeah, let's just rush to finish it, who cares.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, dude, you don't build like this massive fantasy thing and then just like, oh, it's over. And because that's how it felt, you know? And like, I love the show. It's like one of my favorite all-time shows. And like, there was so much that could have happened and then whatever. So I'm also like not in love with prequels. Like, I don't really remember like having watched a thing and then watched a prequel and being like, fuck yeah. I think there's like a mental block where like a sequel makes sense because it feels relevant and there's stakes. But if it's going back to zero, it's like kind of like tough for me. It's like a weird mental block. So I'm very curious. Like, I want to love this show.
Last piece of news. Weird. The Al Yankovic Story trailer came out starring Daniel Radcliffe. At first, I thought it was going to be like a biopic kind of story. But after watching the trailer, I realized, nope, this is just a total like walk hard type movie. But it looks ridiculous. It looks fun. I'm excited to watch this on the Roku channel, which I'm pretty positive it's free, so anyone can watch it. I'm pretty positive the Roku channel is completely free, and anyone can just like download the Roku app, or if you have a Roku, I'm pretty sure it's already on there, and you can just watch it. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure it is free. Did you watch this trailer? I want to know your thoughts if you did.
I only saw the poster, but I haven't watched the trailer yet. It's ridiculous. Like Daniel Radcliffe a lot, so I imagine it's probably nuts.
There's a whole scene where Madonna comes to his mansion and says, you need to do a spoof of my song, and they have a relationship in it. And like, it's ridiculous. It looks absolutely mind-blowing ridiculous. So I'm here for it. It comes out in November. I'm stoked to watch it. The poster kind of defines it all, but I think the trailer is even crazier than the poster. It's just, it looks bonkers as hell, and I'm here for it.
Like, I love Dan Radcliffe. And like, even Weird Al's show, like, I actually watched that all the time as a kid. And like, I had like his box sets and all that kind of stuff too. So I'm like, I'm all in. And especially like embracing the weird, I think that makes it a lot more fun.
Right. It's I don't know what I have liked better, but I'm down for what we're getting. That's for sure. Into the now watching section. I'm gonna let you go first. What have you been watching this past week?
The two like full series I watched. So first, Sandman, which is just so damn good. Like, I read the comics, but I didn't like finish them. I like read like a few trades back in the day, and then I knew that they were working on it for like 20 plus years. Yeah, and then I started it, and like, yeah, it's going to be another like Netflix thing I might not probably care about because it's not on HBO Max or whatever. Then I was like, nope, this is great. And like, I got totally sucked in. And what I love about it is it's like short story feeling. Like, each episode has its own thing, but it all ties into a bigger picture. Whereas like a lot of shows, like, you better pay attention to all this. So like, it keeps it fresh the whole time, and it's really interesting. That's number one. And then number two is The Rehearsal. I don't know if you watched that.
I haven't.
Nathan Fielder, like, from Nathan For You on Comedy Central. Yep. It's one of my like favorite all-time shows. His like wildly dry performance and like him embracing just being awkward all the time. Like it hits like the Larry David void in me whenever I don't have that. And I'm like, oh. And then there's the Tim and Eric part where they find these people that are just so plain or strange. just being themselves. And I don't know how they like attract these people, but
oh my God.
So this whole show is just like,
it's like a real life thing, right?
The rehearsal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the premise of the rehearsal is this guy puts out an ad on Craigslist, wants to solve someone's problem, and then comes up with this like wildly extravagant way of doing that, which means, so it starts with a guy who wants to tell his friend that he lied about getting a PhD or lied about getting his master's. He only got a bachelor's degree. That's how it starts. So they build a whole set based, like literally like every attention to detail. That's exactly like the bar where they go play bingo. They hire everyone who looks like all of his friends and the guy that puts on the bingo game, even get the questions from it. And they recreate that whole scenario and then like keep going over it, keep going over it, and try and like run through these different types of ways you would apologize to your friend. That's how the show starts. And then it just gets like crazy. It's like turns into this like bizarro Truman Show thing. And oh God. But each episode like kind of has a theme about like a weird problem they want to solve for someone, but then all of the things start like trailing into the overall story. Like it's Nathan Fielder is just a genius.
I need to watch it.
It's I've heard so good.
So many good things about it, honestly. So I know it's got renewed for a season two as well. So yeah. HBO Max doesn't really miss, honestly, or HBO in general. Like they've just been putting out banger after banger after banger of just amazing content, honestly. Then, so I need to check that out.
Yeah, like I was gonna say, like HBO, usually anything HBO, I'm like, yeah, it's good. And then I'm 3 episodes into Severance on Apple TV.
Ooh.
Fuck, it's so good. That's like my like comic writer brain is just going like ape shit between like those 3 shows and like how do I pull that into like my own voice and like make a thing. So yeah, I love things that watch it.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
And you go, I didn't know you could do that. And then that like opens up that whole new part of your brain.
Even the whole premise of Severance is like mind-blowing. You're like, it's such a kind of simple thing. Like, why hasn't anyone else done something like this? It's so crazy. And it's funny. This is becoming like a reoccurring theme. Like a bunch of my guests have come on and talked about Severance, which after I talked about watching Severance, so I'm loving that it's like it's like a character in the show as people talking about Severance. Because I if people are like, I need a new show, I want it to be serious, I want a really good show, I'm like, go watch Severance. I just told my friend John, he watched it in like a day, and he's like, dude, this show is fucking incredible, and it only gets crazier too. It's so good. I'm so excited for you to finish the first season. You'll also be kind of mad. Because the way it ends, mad in like a bad way. You're just like, I need more now. Like, what the fuck? Give me more now. That's how that show is. To add yours, I started The Sandman kind of officially last night. I'm like halfway through episode 3, the Joanna Constantine episode. More of what you said is just phenomenal. I actually listened to the Audible version of. I've listened to the first part, which is the first 3 volumes. And it's super well done. It's got amazing voice actors. James McAvoy is fucking Morpheus. Like,
oh my God.
Riz Ahmed is the Corinthian. Like, it is fucking the most. Kat Dennings is Death. Like, it's the craziest voice cast you've ever seen for an Audible telling of a graphic novel. It's
wow. It's
insane. But they have like extra sound effects in it and everything. It's like so well done. I recommend it to like anyone who would check it out. I know there's a second part out. I have not checked out that yet, but
yeah,
it was like my bike riding. My morning bike ride listen as I was riding my bike. It was the best. Like I love it. So good. So when the show finally started, like, oh, there's a trailer. It's definitely coming out. And knowing Neil Gaiman was such a big part of it, that's always a good sign. You know, when someone involved with the source material is directly involved with, or if the person who wrote some source material that's like adapted from it speaks highly of the thing that's been made from what they helped create. It's always a good sign.
When they're quiet, it's a problem.
Yes, yes, exactly. So it's like seeing Dan Slott be so stoked about She-Hulk. I'm like, fuck yeah, Dan Slott.
Yeah, I've been seeing all his quotes about it. That's why I'm like, fuck, I gotta watch this.
But yeah, it's just incredible. It's so enthralling. It's so amazing. Like if you told someone who didn't like comic book stuff and you're just like, just watch The Sandman. And then you told them after it was based on a comic, they'd be like, really? Wow. Because I think comics get kind of shoehorned into like one thing sometimes. Like, oh, it has to be a superhero story or something like that. And it's like, as people like you and I know, it's far more than that. It's like far more than just superheroes and villains. And even the stories in that are far more than just superhero and villain stories. But yeah, The Sandman I watch, great. I am so stoked to watch more. I also watched with my wife, we watched this Netflix movie called Look Both Ways. It stars Lily Reinhart, who's from Riverdale, of all things. She's a really good actress. She was also in Hustle with Jennifer Lopez. She's a really good actress. But it's basically a movie where this girl is graduating from college and she's taking a pregnancy test at this party. It's like the graduation party. And it shows two scenarios of her life happening simultaneously. One, if the pregnancy test was positive, one, if it was negative. And it's kind of a cool way to tell a story because you're seeing the same character going through two completely different forms of life.
Is Luke Wilson in that?
Yes, he's the dad.
Yep. So I just listened to Luke Wilson on Smartless.
And I've been listening to
that podcast, but that's where I heard about this.
Yes, yeah, he's the dad. Which I was like, oh, Luke Wilson's in this. I always get happy when Luke Wilson's in things. I just like Luke Wilson, I guess. But it was surprisingly better than I thought it was going to be, because most of the Netflix movies, especially like the kind of like rom com ish, those kind of like feel good movies, can be very just like, it was fine, but it's not like really good either. I would say this is pretty good. It's not like going to blow your mind, but it's just like a well done story. So if you're into kind of like sort of rom-com-y type stuff, I would say check that out. It's on Netflix. Last two things I watched Welcome to Wrexham. It's a docuseries featuring Mac from It's Always Sunny and Ryan Reynolds, where they buy a football club, and it's them like taking over this football club to try and kind of lift up the whole town. And if you're a fan of Ted Lasso, I would say definitely watch this. I don't even care about football or soccer. I don't care about sports really in general, just personally. But Ted Lasso is like one of the best TV shows in recent memory for me. And this feels like a real life Ted Lasso in ways. First two episodes are up right now. I think by the time this airs, the third episode will be up. It's on Hulu. It's just like a really heartwarming show. And I just kind of love Ryan Reynolds. I don't know. He just seems like the nicest dude. And both of them being as famous as they are, they don't seem like dickheads.
Yeah, I think they're actor, but they also have like writer and producer brain, to where they like,
yes,
understand the full scope of humanity. And I think that's part of the reason that they're like relatable and likable, because they're like, oh yeah, we do this stuff too. We don't just show up and like be a fake.
Yeah, and I think they both came from like pretty much nothing. So I think they have like a, you know, like a real life grasp on life as well, because they were there. Like in the beginning of episode one, like Mac takes his, or it's like his name's Matt, but he takes his son to his like old childhood home, and him being like, hey, you see this small ass room here? It's like, how would you feel if you lived in here with your brother? And stuff like that. It's like, that was my life, you know. It's just like, and now he obviously like lives in this, you know, massive fucking house in LA and everything like that. But it's just a nice show. And then the last thing I watched, I got early access to this new Hulu show called Wedding Season. And if you liked The Flight Attendant that was on HBO Max, it is very much those kind of similar vibes. It deals with the main character, his name's Stefan, and he falls in love with a girl who's engaged. Her name is Katie, played by Rosa Salazar. And he tries to stop her wedding after they have these relationships that were months prior. It shows you current things, but then it shows you things from a few months prior that kind of lead into what the story is telling. It's one of those kinds of stories. After he goes and tries to stop her wedding, her new groom and his whole family wind up dead. And they think it's this guy. He kind of thinks it's her that killed her. So it's this big kind of like murder mystery romp through Europe that you kind of find out more that's going on. Like pretty much every episode ends in a cliffhanger, which is can be exciting or annoying, depending on which way you want to look at it. I always find that like that's kind of like good TV, where it ends on a thing and you're like, fuck, I want to watch the next episode now. It's kind of like the point of, you know, being engaged in TV. So it's a really, really fun series. I got to see the first 7 episodes, but it debuts on September 8th on Hulu. It's called Wedding Season. I would recommend it. It's a really fun show, especially if you liked The Flight Attendant. It's a very, very fun, fast-paced show. But that's all I got for now. Watch. Let's get into our main topic. So I wanted to know, what got you into pop culture? Because obviously you're very ingrained in pop culture and love it. So what got you into that as like a kid, or maybe not even as a kid, as like a young adult?
It's called A Few Chapters. So the first one was, I grew up at like an action figure kid.
Okay.
I watched a ton of cartoons. I had all the toys for the cartoons. Ninja Turtles was a huge thing for me. I had like Ghostbusters, pretty much anything that I saw in a cartoon, I was like, I need the toys of that. And I was like,
right.
Thing about it. So like my very first, I remember having this like little like Superman figurine and I would just chew all the time. And then it was like this like weird, like melted Superman thing I would carry around all the time. So that was like one of my like first earliest like toy memories. And then fast forwarding to like me just like loving movies and like dancing with my brother to the soundtracks, to the point where I remember one Christmas I had, Spider-Man and X-Men were like my two things, which is hilarious that the movies ended up being whatever for a long time. Those cartoons though, like both of those cartoons and Batman, the animated series, were like super, super, super formative for me. Cause it was like, oh, it doesn't just look cool. Like the stories are so damn good. And all of this, I remember one Christmas Eve, I set up all of my, it was all of my X-Men action figures, like the big, like plastic guys. And I wrote a note to Santa Claus and I said, I changed my mind. I actually want Spider-Man instead. So can you bring them to me? And my parents were like, yeah, we'll see if Santa says anything. And then they're like losing their minds. God. And then like a week later, I like end up getting those toys. But like, that's like how my brain would be like, I want this. I want this. I saw this on TV. I want this. And then like, I got huge into wrestling. So like wrestling was like a really big thing for me. So I had like the ring, like from start to finish, I ended up having like 400 action figures. So my brother would get like a guitar, but I would get like 20 action figures or whatever. And I'd be like, you're so stupid. Like you got one thing. I got all these. I'm rich. What started happening was, and like, this is kind of ties into like a few things. So I would like watch a cartoon or a movie or whatever. And then I would get my action figures and then I would like replay what I saw. And it would be like from start to finish, I'm like telling a story with myself. And I'm like totally chill. Just like being in a corner by myself. Like my brother, like playing music, being like a virtuoso. And then I'm just like, yeah, like I'm going to figure out this move, or I'm going to this cool thing, or this scene, or whatever that thing is. I didn't know I was doing it, but that was like me like learning how to write in real time just by replicating and like acting stuff out. What did I want to see? And then how do I like make that happen? Then it was like, hey, your brother's getting a guitar. Like he played like piano and all this stuff like really well. You want a drum kit? I'm like, sure. So I'm like, whatever.
Sure.
And then my parents were like, thank God, like something that's not just action figures and cartoons. I remember like they took us to a music shop, got my brother a guitar, got me a drum kit. I started playing, but I was still like with like chilling my action figures, doing my thing. And then one, we did a garage sale and my mom was like, I want you to put like all of them out and do like $1 a piece. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm like, obviously they're not going to sell. And then like an hour later, my neighbor's like, how much for all of them? And my mom was like, oh, it's like, I think it's like 350 total. And she's like, yeah, cool, I'll do that. And then in one fell swoop, she bought all of them. And I was like, well, my childhood's done. And they're like, I guess you just play music now. And then that's when I started getting really into music, right? For years, I was like only focusing on that. And like, I didn't really like play as much video games as I did. And I was like, I'm just going to be really good at drums. Drum, drum, drum all day. And then it wasn't until like, so I had this like, I don't know how long the time period was. It was like 6 to 8 years or so where I was like only music brain. And I had my like young creative brain of like all the comics and like and the only comics I read, like traditional ones, were like maybe some like Spider-Man things. I remember Spawn was a big thing for me. That was like one huge phase. Cause I had like friends, cool older brother that got us into like Metallica and Spawn and like Todd McFarlane.
Right.
Twisted. So I like got into that, got that like out of my system, just, like loved the movie. And then I was like, well, according to the source, like at like a young age, I like could decipher that stuff. So then got super into music, diving into music. And then this is like, this whole thing sounds like very much like name drop toot my own horn thing. I really don't mean it this way, but it just to explain how surreal it is and what snapped me into getting back into comics. Our band, The Swellers, we did a Southeast Asia tour with Paramore, and we landed in Singapore, and the guy across from us had a Marvel t-shirt on. And he was like, everyone recognizes Haley. No one knows the rest of the band. And clearly no one knew who we were, but we're like sitting next to her at the airport. And he's like, hey, my name's CB Cebulski. I work for Marvel. You know, the guy that runs Marvel now. And I was like, yeah, cool. I like cartoons and like movies and stuff. And he's like, yeah. Anyway, and then like, keeps going back to like, look at her and like, they want like the star, right? So he's like, we're doing a big Comic-Con in Singapore. You guys want to go? We're like, yeah, sure. So I'm like shitty young kid that's like, I don't have any money, but like I happen to, like we were always like the accoutrement to fame. Like we were like, if like someone was like doing really well, we were like the opening band no one ever talked about that we like snuck onto the tour, but then we still had to sleep at people's houses and got paid like $100 a day. Like right. As a band, not individually, by the way. So like that was like a lot of my Swellers days where we're like guerrilla touring or whatever. So we go to this Comic-Con, we're looking around and like people are like taking photos with the stormtroopers and doing the whole thing. Then along the way, I'm like, I like remember looking at like a stack of Walking Dead comics and I'm like, God, I want to get into that. And then Haley's like, just buy one. And I'm like, they're like $30. I don't know. And I like talked myself out of the comics. Every single one we went to, I'm like, I don't know. I'll just get food later or something. Like that's how my brain was. Obviously, like she's doing well. So it's like, I don't understand why this kid's like going through this weird mental thing. So I'm like fighting both. I don't know if I could spend money on this thing. And then like, do I want to open that door again? I don't know. So I'm like dealing with my own shit, right? The funny thing is after that, it turns into this whole thing where someone recognizes her and then all the people start running away from like the people in costumes and stuff and then getting photos with her. Then we had to run away from paparazzi, which I've never seen in my life until that day. Like people would like the crazy, like huge camera hiding behind like a wall. And then she looked at me and she's like, I wish I could just hang out, you know? And I like remember that, like all of that experience being in one thing to where I was like, music's kind of fucked up because like, yeah. At a certain point, that's where it ends up. There's this joy of being a writer to where you can like write the stuff that all these people are celebrating. And then you don't even have to be the like celebrity. You just like tell story. Like it's very much the Neil Gaiman, like stories, everyone dreams, but like all the bullshit that they talk about Sandman and stuff. Right. But there's like a cool part about that where I was like, I think I love the writing part and I don't necessarily need to be like the face on all this stuff. That got me into, I do love these movies. I love these shows. I love all these things that like I've like been seeing, but on a deeper level of like a creative standpoint where I'm like, I think I want to do this. So then I was like, okay, how do I do that? So I'm like an annoyingly motivated person where I have like anxiety and drive and they're like 50-50 for me. And then coffee, which is like an extra 30%. So I'm like,
I can relate.
Yeah. I was like, oh, it's what, 8 p.m. and I have cold brew still. So I have this like, okay, I want to do a comic. I want to write a comic. I'm writing for like music magazines and other stuff at the time, but I'm like, I want to do fiction. I want it to be a comic. I love comics. I've been like holding off on this for so long. Now I'm like diving in. Like my friends gave me stacks and I like started like getting super stoked on it again. So the Flint water crisis is also going on during all this shit. I want to put together a Flint water crisis like charity comic, and it, because it's for charity, that's enough of a driver of like me and my friends, both writers and artists, to get together and do a charity. I like spearheaded this, it was called Hope, a Comic for Flint, and it was just like an anthology of short stories from like my friends who all of us kept going, it'd be so cool to do a comic, whatever, yeah, and we kept like saying right. That and I'm like, fuck that shit, we're doing it because we have to, because it's for our city. Then we like all got together, did this cool big thing. Ended up getting picked up by Source Point Press, which is like a publisher out of Michigan. One of the collaborators like actually like worked with them and then now actually works for them. It all like turned into this like, we got it done. Cool. And then I was like, oh shit, I'm a comic writer. Right. Oh, okay. And like I found like this weird like loophole into like that world. And then I was like, I want to start making friends with more people. So I started like doing my thing where I like follow all these people on Twitter and I'm like talking to them. And then occasionally they follow me. I'm hoping I'm not like a reply guy being annoying. So I'm like,
Right.
But I'm like music guy. Like I've seen stuff. Like I'm not like a normal dude. Through music and all that stuff, I started meeting more and more comic people. And then like this alternative group of comic people. And then I'm like, oh, that's my world. Okay. Doesn't have to be like the capes and the cowls. This can be like, how do we write these like stories about life that like impact people in a different way? That kind of like all started like fusing together. So it's the years of the stuff that I loved in childhood with my adult perspective. And then like through the lens of this like awkward creative kid who like saw all these things, but didn't comprehend them. Cause he was like, we talked about before, you know, being on tour all the time. I got a lot of life experience and saw different types of people all over and like started like absorbing the human condition. And then I was like, how do I put that through my lens? Then I started reading like Garth Ennis and I started reading like these like sarcastic asshole dudes that are like taking like a different lens on everything. And Matt Fraction, I don't know if you're familiar. He's like, like Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker are like my shit. Specifically Matt, where I'm like, you can write like that and it's allowed and it works. Whether it's Marvel or Image or whatever you're doing, you can have that us voice, like the one of us, like chant, like is always in my head when I read his stuff. That's the shit. Brian K. Vaughan's another one of those guys where like, obviously he's massive, but it's because he wrote such relatable things. Neil Gaiman did that with Sandman where he's like, it's not just weird, like 9,000 page novels for fantasy stuff. It's like, what about the context through real people? That's where I want to be. It all started with like just a bunch of like short stories and like whatever I can get done. And then I worked on like this one project that kind of got screwed over and I never got my first full comic credit. And I almost got picked up by another thing. Like, so similar to the music industry, there's been like a bunch of these like setbacks to where I'm like, I feel like if I didn't, with the pandemic happening and me going like headfirst into marketing, I have a tangible result of like doing well for other people as a creative director working. So like you were mentioning you're a designer. So I work with like designers, writers, and I get to be creative in that thing for a bunch of other people, but I tend to deprive of doing it for myself because the reward takes so goddamn long with comics, the collaborators lining all these people up, worst of all publishers, where it's like, you have to pitch, you do your song and dance, either it's nothing or it might be something. And then it's months for a maybe, and then it's years for a yes, and then it goes into production. This is taking a long time. So my few like maybe things that were gonna like take off, circumstances and people and whatever, just were like just swatted it out of the sky. So I'm like, all right, I'm seeing my friends that like only do comics that are like, I'm gonna dedicate everything to this and see what happens and it pays off. So like my friend Liana Kangas, who like me and her got into comics around the same time. And then I went more like traditional work route and music stuff started happening again out of nowhere, which I was never expecting. So I'm like, I'm very busy with that. That's cool. And then I'm like watching her crush it. You went through the shit and you endured and it's working. Hell yeah. And I'm seeing all my friends like do a version of that. So on my end, I haven't done my own Kickstarter. I've been part of other people's Kickstarters, but I know how long it takes. I've like pitched to publishers and I've gotten like yays or nays or in betweens. And either way, stuff is still like in rotation. So I'm like, how do I just like put shit out there? So I started compiling short stories. So I got my like first 5 years of comics and like my favorite short stories and like random things like that. So I put together a thing called Headachers. The name actually comes from a thing that I pitched that got picked up. And then the publisher completely ghosted me and I never heard from the person again. And that was supposed to be my like break in comics at a very early on. Luckily that happened because I needed the reality check, you know, that like everyone goes through. Headachers is a story about this dude with anxiety. I won't tell you more about that specific story, but it was like based on my days at Starbucks and like this dude who had anxiety and like shit just got worse and worse. Before the like twist kicks in, I had my pitch pages, which was those X amount of pages. I'm like, I've never put that in the world, like out into the world. I'm going to do that. You know, this thing's been floating around. So it's like a collection of my pitches and these other stories that I've worked on that act as like standalone little micro stories, but like all have a different taste and all were like collaboration with like people I love. So I was like, Headachers is going to be an anthology. It's not this failed story from before. So I'm going to just finish that, put a stamp of approval on it, and just put it out into the world, pay for it myself and publish it and do all that stuff. Now, I just have it on my site, johnodiener.com, J-O-N-O-D-I-E-N-E-R. Again, that's J-O-N-O-D-I-E-N-E-R.com. Use code, nothing, because I'm cheap and I'm not giving you a discount. With that said, like I want to take control of stuff for a little bit. And then I've planted some seeds and we'll see if they pan out. Who knows? Mm-hmm. There's always something in production, right? So
yeah,
this is my like, fuck the world. I'm putting it out into the world. And I've done that with music my whole life. I just waited 2 years for a No Trigger record to come out. So I could put out a comic. I compiled all these things that were floating around. And then before C2E2 last winter, no joke, like 2 weeks before, I got all of these ready to go for that. This is the quickest turnaround I've ever seen for a comic in my life. And I see these people do these Kickstarters that take a year plus that I'm a part of or whatever, and or people never get the thing, or publishers that sit on it forever because of whatever's going on. At least I have something. And that's that like nice, like tangible reward that I was talking about earlier, where I'm like, I got a thing to sell. I'm going to sell it. This is early me, but it's something. So that's my like placeholder for whatever the next thing is, you know?
That's awesome though. I mean, that's exciting too, that you may have taken things that set you back and you're like, you know what? I'm going to use this to make something now. And that's a great way to do it. So that was like your first full on you writing, like this is your comic. This was like Headacres was your first one.
There was one before called The Inevitables that I wrote for. It was like a music project thing that did a Kickstarter, but not a lot of people ended up getting to see it. That was going to be my like thing. And then now this is my like, no, I'm in control of the variables here. I can physically have them. I can sell them whenever I want. It's my thing. This is very much my like personal compiled thing. That's not just a website or a whatever. It's like my own anthology. That's a good way of putting it.
Right. Cool. Yeah. So like he said, you can go to the website and pick it up. I will, if you are listening to this after it premieres on Adobe, the link will be down in the description. You can just go and click it there to pick it up. Before we get out of here, I know, obviously, No Trigger just put out that new album, which go check out if you haven't. But is there anything coming down the pipe that you want to promote?
Dr. Album from No Trigger is out now on Red Scare Records, Red Scare Industries more specifically. I also have another band called 84 Tigers. I don't know if you're familiar with the band Small Brown Bike, but like in Michigan, they're like post-hardcore legends. That's my favorite Michigan band. And then out of nowhere, a few years ago, I got an email from out of the blue. I was like, hey, I have a new project. You want to play in it? It's the singer of Small Brown Bike. And I'm like, holy shit. So I thought it'd be like an acoustic thing. He sends me the demos and he's like, oh no, it's like kind of a continuation of what we're doing, but just like a more heavy version. Like, who else is in it? He's like, oh, my brother that was in Small Brown Bike and did like the vocals with me. And I'm like, oh my God, I grew up loving both of your voices and hearing your music. Like, this is so cool. So amazing. We did another, that was another pandemic project. We got to record at Mark Hudson Rancho Recordo in Michigan. He did like Against Me, Taking Back Sunday and Saves the Day. He did Swellers Records. He's like my music mentor. Being with like guys from like one of my favorite all-time bands, recording at one of my favorite studios. And then like, it just turned into this like magic thing. We signed to a label called Spartan Records. They just put out like Rocky Votolato and they're putting out some, Shiner Records as well. A very cool label that just signs like shit they like. 84 Tigers album Time in the Lighthouse is coming out in October on Spartan Records. I'm a co-owner of Rootless Coffee. The short pitch is it's high-end craft coffee, but packaged in bags designed by comic artists. So everyone from like Brian Level, Liana Kangas, Sally Cantorino, Fabian Lele, Cara McGee, all of my like homies in comics, I'm like bringing into like doing labels for us. So it's everything from like Twin Peaks nods to Big Lebowski to like just like funny, cool, weird shit. So it's rootlesscoffee.com for that stuff. No Trigger's playing Riot Fest in Chicago, Punk and Drublick in Worcester, Massachusetts. And then we're playing with the Lawrence Arms in Brooklyn. 84 Tigers is playing The Fest. Same with No Trigger, The Fest in Gainesville, Florida. And then we're playing a show in Michigan with Bars of Gold, which is the new Bear vs. Shark band. So another like Michigan legend thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very awesome. So yes, make sure you support Jono in any way possible. There's many ways. So any way you can, definitely do. This is an awesome conversation. I'm glad we got to have this. This is really, really dope.
Yeah, thank you for waiting for me. It's always worth the wait, I would say.
It was worth the wait. You know what? It was worth the wait. It was worth me putting off more Sandman for this. Awesome, guys. Yes, make sure you go and support Jono in all of his endeavors. There are many of them. And if you
add Jono Diener on all the stuff.
Boom. And if you want to support the podcast, just go to metalcorners.com. There's merch. All our links are right there. Super easy. And if you want to follow me on my personal stuff, it's just @SeanXMott on Twitter and Instagram. And until next time, see you later, nerds.